Blog Talk Radio.
Sangai Nation, welcome to the show here on another Sunday afternoon. Really quickly, as we wait for the guest, some show notes. If you're looking for some wrestling today, you have NWA Blue Collar, as usual, at the North Portland Eagles in Portland, Oregon. You also have KDW, that is coming up later this afternoon in Jeffersonville, Indiana. And also here, let me give a quick check to my notes. We have AOW featuring Bad Blood tonight in Victorville, California. Brainbuster Pro Wrestling in Miami, Florida. EPW in Green Acres, Florida. And Beyond Wrestling tonight in Somerville, Massachusetts, as well as MOW in Flint, Michigan. We'll get out there, support your local independents. Without further ado, our guest, I believe, has joined us. I would like to welcome to the show today one Earl Cooter. Sir, welcome to the show.
Hey, what's up, bud? How you doing?
Well, since today is your first time on our particular program, you're going to get our first timer's question. How did you get your start in the professional wrestling industry?
I was at the bus station one day, and I walked by an old man in a trench coat, and he said to me, "Hey kid, you want to be a wrestler?" And I said, "Sure." And he told me to come around the corner, and he opened up his trench coat, and the rest is history.
One way to get in the business for sure.
Nah, the real way that I got in was, you know, I think I've told the story before, but I mean, basically, dude, I had a pretty, I was part of a pretty prolific backyard wrestling fed, and there was an old timer local wrestler whose kid ended up, I guess, coming to see us, and then the one dude was like, "Hey, a couple of you guys are pretty good." And so I ended up at the now legendary LIWF Doghouse. And that would be where it started for me.
Now, over the course of your career, I'm sure you've been in a lot of particularly odd matches, especially getting your start in the prolific backyard fed. I'm sure you've seen your share of some odd things and odd venues and so forth. What to date has been the oddest match in which you've competed?
You know, there's a few of them, but I might as well go ahead and plug something that's tangible for people. So there's a book out called Wrestling's 101 Strangest Matches. And, you know, it's got a lot of cool matches in there with obviously a lot more people, a lot more legendary than me. But I am in the book, and it features me versus Shockwave the Robot. And for those of you that may not know, Shockwave the Robot is a wrestling robot. And it's pretty strange. And so highlights of the match included me throwing a beer on him. I spilled a beer on him, and I short-circuited him. And then I rewired him, and it didn't quite work out in my favor. And so I would say overall, that's pretty bizarre. But like I said, you can read all about it in the book, Wrestling's 101 Strangest Matches. It's in bookstores even.
Al, did you have to sit through a breakdancing session after the match with Shockwave?
I believe it was actually before the match and after the match. Shockwave the Robot did breakdance both times.
He does love to breakdance.
I'm surprised you knew who that was. A lot of people don't remember or know. I don't know what really happened to him. I don't know. I haven't seen him in a while. Last I ran into him was, I don't even know. I think maybe like Gathering of the Juggalos was the last time I might have seen Shockwave the Robot. So he's a. I'm sorry. I was going to say he's a good little robot. But anyway, go ahead.
Very true. Now, you've wrestled a very wide variety of different opponents, and that encompasses a lot of different wrestling styles. What would you consider your favorite style to wrestle?
That's a pretty decent question. You know, firstly, I have wrestled a very wide range of opponents. I would say, you know, I don't really know how that happens. Like, I mean, I think it's just because, like, I guess I have a strong balance of character and also like size and look. So I think I match like on paper, it's like, ah, you can just put them in there with anybody. So sometimes I get, you know, really good ones. Sometimes I get really bad ones and a lot of in betweens. My favorite style of match, like if you were like, you're saying like, as far as like, be it like hardcore or normal or,
Yeah, like the Lucha style or the British on the mat style,
right,
that type of thing.
No, yeah, definitely not. I don't think anybody would regard me as a talented British on the mat style wrestler. Although I have been getting some pointers from some super talented British mat wrestlers that are actually British. So look out. But I would say my style is more of a mix. You know what I mean? Like, I think the surprise of me is I'm a little bit more high flying than people notice. But I think generally, if I had to describe my style, you know, I don't want to call myself a brawler, but I like matches with, like, you know, like a lot of striking and like, you know, a good mix of like impacts, you know. So I guess you could call me kind of a brawler style, but I don't know. It's hard to really pin down, you know, per se. But I would say, like, that those are my favorite kind of matches. I like anything goes, like, brawlish kind of, you know, kind of get your hands dirty style. Like, you know, I'm not gonna excel with the chain wrestling. I'm not gonna best you with, you know, there's more comedy guys, you know, funnier than me. There's guys that are higher flyers than me. So I like to just like take it straight ahead and, you know, smash people in the mouth and do a couple cool things here and there. But I would say, if you ask me, I'd say that's well-rounded. But that's just my opinion. I don't know.
Considering that's the favorite style of match that you have, would you think that you'd fit in more in line with the Japanese style of wrestling as opposed to, say, the Mexican style or a European style?
Okay, that's a good question. And before we get to that, I just want to backtrack, and I want to say, like, what that felt like to me is, like, you just asked, like, Led Zeppelin what kind of music they were. You know what I mean? So if it sounded like I didn't have much of an answer, it's like, if you ask Led Zeppelin, do you guys consider yourself a rock and roll band or progressive rock? Or, you know, maybe they would say quickly, just to be quiet, like, a rock and roll band. But I think Led Zeppelin's so much more than that, and I think they would agree. But anyway, back to your other question. You know, I think I would. I'm surprised. And like I said, not knowing the, you know, prestige that goes along with it, I don't want to take it and make it sound lighthearted. But I am kind of surprised I've never been to Japan, considering I know quite a few people that have, and I feel like I've had good matches with quite a few people that have. And I definitely feel like my style would mesh well. And, you know, I think I mean, for those that don't know me or maybe check me out from this interview or whatever, like that's the thing, you know. I mean, I'm a believer in wrestling that, you know, you're only as good as your opponents. And, you know, I have no problem being in there with, you know, sometimes I get a lot of, you know, up-and-comers and guys that aren't quite, you know, dialed in yet. And I don't mind that, you know, so I'm saying. But it also doesn't make me look amazing either. But like I said, if you look at my top moments of my career, I would say, yeah, I very well would probably be right at home there, and there's a lot of things that maybe I haven't even had an opportunity to scratch the surface of that if I was in Japan. I think I would. And I've had some talks back and forth with a couple places, and, you know, I just haven't gotten, you know, gotten it together, haven't gotten lucky and like hit off on that yet. But yeah, I'd love to go there, and I think I would do very well there. I think I would do a lot better there, like you said, instead of England. I think I'd bring a lot more in Japan that the fans would be more interested in.
I'll just put it out there that you versus Shockwave would be a perfect fit for DDT in Japan.
Yeah, I feel like that would be cool. And I mean, like, we did that. Look, when I wrestled Shockwave the Robot, we're talking like 2008 or 9. You know, I'm a long way from, you know, those days. And I was pretty good. You know, I was pretty good then, the match. You know, I mean, I think it would be amazing if he was still going and we did that. I think I'd be able to blow it out of the water. And it would be fun. I would love to. I think that would be great.
What so far has been the longest match that you've ever been in, time-wise?
I think. You know, I don't know if it was the longest, but what comes into my mind actually makes me laugh. It was a tag match with – I was in Halifax, Nova Scotia. It was a tag match with – Bushwhacker, it was me and a guy named Titus versus Bushwhacker Luke and Lanny Poffo. And my God, that match seemed endless to me. And to be honest, like, you know, there was a set of circumstances that led up to it. And in the moment, you know, I look back at it now and I think it's silly. But in the moment, I was so angry and I so didn't want to be there, like, in that particular match, in that particular moment. And it felt like an eternity, and I was just the whole thing was awful, and I was just like, oh my God, make this end. And like, I didn't want to get in the ring. I remember the guy that tried to tag me in like one time, and I didn't necessarily have to get in the ring right there, and I was like, nah, it's good, keep going. And you know, that makes me laugh. That was like one of those things. Like, the match was okay, and you know, everybody did what they had to do, but like, honestly, my heart wasn't into it, and I was kind of angry, and it was a lesson learned. But remind me that felt like it was probably the longest match I was ever in. There might be more, but I forget them. I've had a tremendous amount of matches, actually. So they all kind of get lost. And, you know, the longest ones are probably the ones I try to forget the most.
And one of the things that is sort of a dying art form today in professional wrestling is the role of manager. You see them on the independents on a somewhat regular basis, but nowhere like they used to be. In the major promotions, are very, very few and far between. What's your opinion of managers as to how they could relate to the business today?
Okay, that's a good question. And what I would say is this: the reason why you know, managers seem prevalent to some extent. Like, I know what you're saying as far as, like, they're there, but, like, a lot of them don't really make an impact and whatever. The problem is because nowadays people get on shows and get involved with shows, whether it's whether they've paid money or they're, you know, selling a million tickets or, you know, they're the owner's brother or uncle or cousin or whatever. They don't really know what they're doing out there, so they're not really trained, and so they're out there and they're talking on the microphone and they're interrupting matches and they're jumping up on the ring apron. And like I said, they don't really have a good understanding of how it's all supposed to work, so it becomes very misguided and ineffective. And I think you know, coming from a guy like, so I, you know, have a manager a lot of the times. Like I'll travel with her and you know, she's been on shows with me all over the place. You know, she's a wrestler, Candy Cartwright. And, you know, she gets it. Like, she understands how to interact in a match. You know, I can get her to do, you know, spots where she runs in and, you know, has an actual impact on the action. She knows when to liven up the crowd, when to quiet them down. Like, she gets it. And I'm saying, having that is, I mean, when you have a manager, you know, the second part of your question, when you have a manager that understands those things and has a look like that and, you know, can do those kinds of things, I mean, it's all money, dude. Like, I mean, everybody wants to see that. Who doesn't want to see a hot girl that can, you know, show appeal to the crowd and get them to interact with her, and then also can get physical, and then also, you know what I mean, just always seems to be at the right place at the right time. So, yeah, I think it's huge. I think it enhanced I don't want to say the mid part of my career. I'd like to think I'm still in the mid part of my career, but in the coming up of me, where I started getting on to bigger and better things, I got to give credit what credit's due, and I say having her tremendously helped create a reaction for me, because, I mean, people were already pissed off at me. You know, every guy in the room wanted to punch me in the face when I come walking out with a girl looking like that. You know what I mean? Acting like a dick. I mean, that was all it took. I mean, I have arenas full of people wanting to fight me over it. You know what I mean? So it's huge. I mean, if you're trying to get heat, and even times where, you know, we were the good guys, it was, you know, instant sympathy when you got a pretty girl out there scared for my life while somebody's beating me with a chair, you know? Definitely an enhancement.
Yeah, I agree 100% about managers not going out there trained to do what they need to do in a match. I've seen that quite a bit.
Yeah, you know, it's unfortunate. And the problem is, it's never going to go away. And it always existed. Even in TV wrestling, look, there was guys here and there that really had no business being out there, and they were out there for whatever reason. I mean, that's just the way wrestling is. But the problem is now, it's so prevalent because there's so many, like, everybody acts like, oh, the, like, you know, you always get these wrestling purists and they're like, oh, the territory's died and blah, blah, blah. And look, indies are, there's more independent shows than there ever was in the history of wrestling right now. People start them up almost daily. There's a million feds, there's this, there's that, you know. And so these dudes, you know, they get validated by being on one show, and then 50 of their friends go on Twitter or Facebook and, you know, give them a thumbs up and say how good they were. So then another promoter sees that, and what the hell do they know? They're like, I don't know, yeah, some guy. So there we go. And now they're booking that guy. And so this guy now, the legitimacy, you know, supposedly grows, and now he's out in the wrestling world. And it's like, I share locker rooms with people that I know full well don't belong in there. And, I mean, it's not – I mean – I'm not going to sit there and bully them out of there, but I also, the ones that don't belong, you know, I kind of just avoid. Like, I know who's who, and I mean, it is what it is. But it is sad to see, like, it is comical. Like, you know, you see them on Facebook and stuff like that and giving their opinions, and I'm like, yeah, it's just the wrong side of the rail. They should be on the other side of the rail.
At this point in time, my co-host QT is standing by, and I know that QT's got some questions to ask you, so I'm going to pass things to him for a bit.
All right, sweet, man.
Well, thank you, Sanjay. Hi, Earl.
How you doing, man?
I'm doing good. Earl, I saw your YouTube video entitled The Genius versus Earl Cooter with Candy Cartwright. That was that was quite the entrance by The Genius, but I couldn't help notice that his entrance music was not your standard music for scholarly achievement. He did not come out to pomp and circumcision. I mean pomp and circumstance.
Yeah, dude.
Yes. Now, do you have any information on what his latest degree is and if he graduated summa cum laude?
I do not, but I can tell you this. I'm nearby his house right now. I mean, maybe I could call him up and we could stomp over there and interview him probably, because I am very close to Lanny Poffo's house. In fact, I think he's probably about a block away at the moment. But
Wow.
Okay. You know, I don't know, man. I don't know the music they chose. That was a very random, you know, just to give you a little background on that, imagine, that's my first time wrestling in Prince Edward Island, and I don't know if you've ever been there, but you have to drive on this bridge that's, like, very long, and, like, I saw whales and all kinds of stuff over that bridge, and it was, like, a whole experience in itself. And then imagine I show up at this building, and it's my first time working for this company. I've never actually met any of them in person, and I walk in the locker room, tell me, when I walk in, is, oh, you're the boys from America, right? I said, yeah. And the guy goes, oh, well, okay. And he points to me, and he's like, you're wrestling Lanny Poffo tonight. And I said, oh, all right. Like, for a minute, I'm, like, thinking, he doesn't mean – I didn't even know Lanny Poffo was on it. So I was like, I'm thinking like it's going to be some Canadian dude named Lanny Poffo. I was like, I didn't know. I thought it was like a joke. And it was really Lanny Poffo. He comes walking up to me in the locker room like 5 minutes later. And, you know, he's got a very distinct voice. And he's like, you know, and he comes in and he's like, I can't even, I'm like setting up to do it, but I can't even do it. I'm just going to laugh. Yeah. So, you know, he came in and he's like, so I heard we will be wrestling tonight. And I was like, yeah. And that was about it.
I mean, holy smokes, that's fantastic. I mean, how long was that? Can you estimate the length of that bridge that you traveled over to Prince Edward Island?
I think it was like 40 minutes, an hour. I don't remember, man. It's all a blur. But I remember it being extremely lengthy, not a normal bridge. And I remember being kind of impressed by it. It was long.
Oh, okay. Can you give us a roundabout location or address where the Genius lives? You said you were only a block from there? You're not stopping his house, are you?
I'm about a block away from him. I know that. Lives in Florida, man.
Oh, okay. You're down in Florida. Wow. All right.
I'm down in Florida at the moment. I just worked on a show Thursday, and I actually was supposed to do one yesterday, but I changed the plan, so didn't make that one, and so I'm down here for a few more days. I'm going to be at the World Wrestling Network Academy training some people on Tuesday, and we'll go from there. As usual, I'm always moving around on the road here.
All right, okay. When was the last time you marched to Pomp and Circumstance?
I don't know. That's a good question, but I feel like it's a song that should play. Like, I wouldn't mind if I woke up each morning and as I was going from the bedroom to the kitchen to make breakfast, I would be totally okay if that was playing.
Oh, okay. And I'd like to tell our Turnbuckle Turmoil listeners that earlier Pomp and Circumcision was not a Freudian slip. Yes.
Dude, it's actually, you know, all that was going through my mind is, and hopefully, well, not that there's anything wrong with it, but I mean, it sounds more like it would be a homosexual porn one, but I think it's a good name for a porno, dude. Pomp and Circumcision. I think somebody, I hope they've made it. If they haven't, they should.
Yes. Well, maybe they made one of those in the 70s. Yes.
Yeah, I was probably. Well, I'm just saying. I think it's a good. I definitely dig the name.
Oh, all right. Okay, I'll mark that down. Okay, very good. Well, Earl, at the 5:58 mark, and again at the 6:01 mark, the Genius demonstrated one of the universal law of physics when he used motion, weight, leverage, and a fulcrum to use two-arm drag takedowns on you. Do you know if the Genius took physics at Ithaca College, and has Miss Cartwright ever taken physics?
Well, I can tell you this. You know, I do remember him. I mean, I don't remember him giving me arm drags, but if you say he did, I guess he did. I would guess the Genius understands physics. He is a smart guy. He speaks multiple languages. It doesn't have a lot to do with physics, but it does demonstrate that he's smart. I'm sure he's at least read a book on it. Even if he's not a real genius, I'm sure he was interested in at least the gimmick, so I'm sure he tried to read as many, physics, science. Like you said, he learned some languages. So I'm sure he tried to be as well-rounded just for the sake of his gimmick. So he probably did learn a little bit about the physics you speak of. Candy Cartwright, on the other hand, about the only thing I could tell you physics-wise with her is I'm pretty sure if she fell off a boat in the middle of the ocean, she'd float for a week.
Wow, all right, okay. Okay, very good. All right. I'm not quite sure what that means, but I'll do research into this. Yes.
I'm sure you won't mind.
Okay. Well, Earl, I was amazed at how shiny and clean this building was where you wrestled the Genius. Now, was this for Ultimate Championship Wrestling? And and I guess they are based in Canada since you crossed that bridge. Yes.
Yeah, they're based out of the Maritimes, and it is Ultimate Championship, UCW, and I forget. I work for like 3 or 4 of them up there. I've done tours. That one, that was the last tour I did with them. That was a while ago. It was like, this is like 2011, I think. Prince Edward Island, a bunch of little towns, I forget. But that arena was, it was a hockey. It was the cool thing about that, that was a Tuesday night, dude. There was probably 400 plus in there. And, I mean, on a Tuesday night in a town, when I tell you Prince Edward Island, it was shut down by, that show was like 6 o'clock. I think we were out of there by 9. The place was a ghost town. You know, it was like shut down at 9 o'clock, I remember. And I remember we were staying at some, like, observatory/dormitory, like, over, like, a cliff overlooking the ocean. It was pretty wild. Pretty quiet, very, very serene kind of setting. And I felt like that's how I felt pretty much about Prince Edward Island. And if you've ever been to these parts of Canada, it's weird because everything looks like it's still like 70s or 80s. So.
Oh, okay. Well, I did have a port of call myself in Nova Scotia. Yes.
Right. Well, they kind of upped it. Well, you're talking about Halifax?
Yes.
Yeah, well, you know, Halifax, they kind of definitely updated it a lot. But, you know, I feel like in 5 years, that place looks totally different to me. I mean, except for the vintage, you know, they got their historical buildings there. But I'm saying, like, all the other stores and businesses have been all modernized and whatever. But, like, in that Prince Edward Island area and places like that, it's definitely very 70s and 80s looking. Things are closed. But, like, you can't go to a gas station after 10 o'clock. It's not going to happen. I remember tracks on that trip. Was it that trip? I think it was. No, it was a different trip. But one of those trips in Canada, I remember the stupid kids I was with, you know, these were back in the days when I used to have to drive there. So we all drove there, and I remember, I think it was my car, you know, and I remember, I think I had broken my foot, and the tour just ended. Of course, the last match of the tour, I break my foot. And I remember... I wanted. I was like, I just wanted to eat an ice cream. I ate a big ice cream, and I just wanted to go to sleep. And I was like, I'm done. I'm going to sleep. My foot's broke. Okay, I couldn't wait to get home. And I remember telling the kid after I was like eating ice cream, I was like in so much pain. I like passed out in the back seat. I remember telling him, hey, we should probably get gas now. And he was like, oh yeah, we'll get it a little bit or whatever. I was like, all right. I didn't argue. And I just remember somewhere about 5 a.m, the car actually running out of gas. And I remember luckily we were only a few blocks from a gas station, but the problem was we had to actually wait till 8:30 in the morning. So we had to sit on the side of the road for like 3 hours until the actual gas station opened, because it's not like America and gas stations aren't 24 hours.
Ooh, wow. How can you confirm how cold it was outside?
It wasn't bad. It was springtime. So I had a bunch of sweaty men huddled in a car. So it wasn't, was anything but cold.
Oh, now, you know, that reminds me of Henry Rollins.
Pomp and
Black
does it remind you of pomp and circumcision? Because it reminds me of that.
Well, maybe if that Canadian town is stuck in the 70s, they have seen pomp and circumcision. Yes.
I believe it. I believe they have.
Wow. Well, you're being stranded by the side of the road while traveling with a bunch of guys that are all sweaty reminded me of Henry Rollins of Black Flag and his autobiography, Get in the Van.
Yeah, Henry Rollins is pretty cool. I really dug his work on Sons of Anarchy. I thought he was fantastic in that.
Yeah, now speaking of Henry Rollins, you yourself have a slight resemblance to him. Have you yourself thought of, when you retire from wrestling, going on the spoken word tour?
I have never heard. I did used to have a shaved head, and I still never heard I look like Henry Rollins. But I don't necessarily know Well, maybe I could do spoken word. I do write a lot of stuff, and I do write poems, and I do, I am a bit of an artist, so I would never say never. I mean, I'm more of a musician, and, you know, I've done some pretty neat things with that. But yeah, I mean, hey, never say never. I'll do the spoken word thing, probably.
Oh, all right. Well, now Henry pretty much had a bald head when he was active with Black Flag, but currently he has a number 3 clipper all over, a clipper cut, number 3 guard
super
all over.
Okay. Well, you know, the good thing, if he's using super cuts, the good thing is, I'm not, don't quote me on it, but I'm pretty sure after you get 7 haircuts, the 8th one is free. So he's definitely saving money. And I think haircuts for men are only $10 or $15 to begin with. So let's give credit where credit's due, and we'll just call Henry Rollins a real man of thrift.
Oh, okay. All right.
Sweet.
Well, Earl, at the 10:05 mark, you used a headbutt to bring the genius to his knees. Most wrestlers are wary of using headbutts these days due to concussions. Did you learn how to use one correctly from any wrestlers that wrestle from the Fiji Islands?
Well, I would say this. I would say more so of the wrestlers using headbutts, I think they'd be more wary of bringing Lanny Poffo to his knees. You know, man, I didn't learn any from the Samoans, but I did used to headbutt pretty much exclusively as a child. It was my chosen go-to thing. So I really do have an ultra-professional headbutt because I did knock out many of second and third graders with a headbutt growing up.
Whoa, second and third graders. Now, was there ever a time in backyard wrestling where you used a headbutt on, like, a second grader, and you had a tooth embedded in your forehead, and you went running into to your mom to show her the tooth?
No, but I could tell you this. You know, speaking of the backyard thing, let me just put this out there. In my backyard bed were Spirit Squad star Mike Mondo and also TNA star Anthony Nice. So we had a pretty solid backyard group, and I believe I did headbutt both of them.
Ooh, okay. Wow. Man, that's fantastic. I've got to brush up on my own headbutting. Yes. Wow.
All right. You could do that while you're watching Pomp and Circumcision, and I'm sure you'll really get something going there, bro.
I'd rather watch old Simpsons reruns than Pomp and Circumcision. Circumstance.
I hear you.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, now, I have a question from Devin South Park Bellinger, and Devin owns a sports card shop in Marysville, Washington. He wanted to know how many other ex-WWF and WWE wrestlers you have faced and which one was your favorite. Well, I'm going to say that your favorite was probably Mick Foley, because I saw a YouTube clip of you wrestling Mick Foley. Yes.
Yeah, I wrestled him twice. He probably, I don't think he was my favorite. My favorite was pretty fun wrestling Goldust. And if I could go back and do it again, there was a couple things I would have done a little differently. But all in all, it was very good. And, I mean, I think a lot of people, what they might not understand and they might think is, you know, given the nature of wrestling, people think you really rehearse things a lot or you talk things over a lot. And the truth is 90% of my matches I don't talk very much about, so I kind of just go out there and do it. So what you're seeing is, like, what's really just happening. It's not really so much of a dance, like a choreographed kind of thing. I like to keep it a little bit more live. And, I mean, I guess in some aspects that could hurt it because I don't, you know, produce these super technical moments with these back and forths. But for me, it's a lot more organic in the moment, and that's cool. So definitely the Goldust one. I think he's one of my favorites. So I was very surprised at how – I mean, it was no surprise to me when he came back and had a full run 6 months after that. I mean, at at that point, I wasn't surprised. When I was in the ring with him, I was surprised with how much he had to offer and like how physically he was still there. You know, like a lot of those guys, when they start getting older, physically they're just not there. And you hit them and you feel like they're made out of paper, and you can, like, you know, you shoulder tackle them and you feel like you just killed them. And Goldust was like, you know, he was rock solid and was impressive.
Wow. Now, are you a big fan of the YouTube clip where Goldust meets Booker T at the 7-Eleven and asks for a bite of his weenie?
I didn't know that existed, no. Let me sure.
Oh, all right. You'll have to look that up. Goldust meets Booker T at 7-Eleven. Yes.
I will totally do that.
Oh, all right. Okay. Well, now, I did see your YouTube video, Earl Cooter Attacks Mick Foley. The announcer said something about Mr. Sockle and Rage in the Cage last September. Was that the first time that you had met Mick Foley in the ring at Rage in the Cage?
Right. Rage in the Cage, you know, and both times, again, I'm going to tell you, in the planning of, we all know that, you know, these things can be arranged and planned and whatever. And both times that I ended up in the ring with Mick Foley were pretty much as spontaneous gets. And, you know, to the point where even when he came out in the second one there, the one that you saw, I didn't actually know he was coming out to the ring. So that was, it was pretty real, you know, in that regard, which is also cool, which, you know, shows you that there can still be some magic in wrestling, which I like very much. The first time, like I said, it just wasn't in the plan, and it just kind of happened, and it was cool. I mean, you know, I thought it was a fun little back and forth, you know, and there's actually a magical moment that exists that we recreated in the second one, and I took this as a tremendous cool thing. That I am the only person that ever got the Mr. Sacco or the mandible claw, and he held the microphone to my mouth, and, you know, while I was screaming. That's never happened on anybody else ever. So
yes, I
just
was
saying,
stunned. Like, you were down on the mat and you uttered something. Yes.
Yeah, with a sock in my mouth, and you know, I'm saying that was the first time that happened was in Rage in the Cage. And like I said, never been done before. And even, I mean, Mick Foley pointed that out to me, not me. I'm saying he said, by the way, that's never been done before. And he actually loved it. And I thought that was awesome to be a part of that. So
wow.
Some little things, I guess.
Well, now, speaking of Devin South Park Bellinger and his sports card shop in Marysville, Washington, do you yourself have any sports cards that are autographed? Wrestling sports cards, autograph.
You know, I personally don't, except in my possession, I currently do have a three or four Scotty Tuhani autographed sports cards that I collected for a fan to give to him. And I'm actually supposed to see this dude shortly, and I will give him his Scotty Tuhani autographed sports cards. That are actually currently, as you're talking to me, they're in my jacket pocket.
Oh, nice. Okay.
So that's about a one in a million. That's about a one in a million question. Because if you ask me that question any other time, the answer would be no. I don't have any. I don't collect wrestling memorabilia. Not even really my own. I try to offer it up to fans. I don't have many fans, but the ones that I do seem to, you know, they want that kind of stuff, so I give it to them. You know, I try to be a nice guy like that. I give out a lot of pictures, and I give out whatever little wrestling trinkets I have to kids and stuff. There's, you know, the whole point is to make it, you know, a magical experience for people. Otherwise, you know, what are you doing? That's my point of view on it, really.
Oh, that's nice. Okay. Well, Earl, are there any truth to the rumors that you will be at the Fiesta Pro Wrestling's Mardi Gras Mayhem to be held February 6th at the New York Sportatorium, where tickets are only $20 for ringside?
I 100% will not be there. I promise you that.
Oh, okay.
So
Well, have
I don't
you
know,
ever
I
been
don't...
to New Orleans for Mardi Gras?
I have. And I also was in New Orleans shortly after Mardi Gras for the WWN Live experience 2 years ago, which was a week-long event with, you know, Evolve, Dragon Gate USA, Kaiju Big Battle. And I was a part of all that, and it was exciting. And that's coming right up around the corner this year in Dallas, Texas, where we will have a whole week's worth of events again. And we had last year was in San Jose with King of the Indies, et cetera. Once again, I was on all that. And I look very much forward to being a part of all of it this year in Dallas, Texas.
Wow, that's quite a bit of a frequent flyer mileage that you're racking up. Yes.
Sure is, bro. My whole life's on the road, man. What can you do? It's the job I chose.
Wow. All right. Have you ever been to Fantasy Fest in Key West?
No, I have not. But if it's the one I think it is, I think I've heard of it. I don't know. There's a lot of those out in Florida. Was it UltraCon? There was one I was supposed to be on. Like, I didn't end up making it. I just had too much going on, and it was like we had, like, one, you know, a lot of times what happens with these promoters is you know, they'll hit you up. Everything's, you know, so internet based nowadays. They'll hit you up on the Facebook or whatever, and they'll talk to you and, hey, why don't you do this and that? And a lot of these guys kind of like, I'm pretty straightforward. Like, if you book me, I'm there, you know, and I think a lot of these guys, they kind of are on the fence or, you know, trying to see who they can fit in. So a lot of times, like, I'll pencil in a date and I don't get a deposit or a ticket or whatever. So when it's not confirmed, it's not confirmed. But, you know, like I said, that UltraCon ring a bell. I think I was supposed to be there. It didn't really happen. But, yeah, I haven't done too many of those.
Okay. All right. Well, Earl, are there any truth to the rumors that you plan to form a tag team in 2016 with Tracy Wayne Gacy?
I would be very open to that. Tracy's fantastic. I think she, you know, she needs a little more work, but she's fantastic. And I think obviously everybody's very interested in her when they see her come out there. So, yeah, I'd be all for it. I think we'd kill it.
Oh, all right. Okay. Well,
and I also think I will point out.
Okay. Yes.
I'm just saying. I'd also point out that with the addition of Charles Manson to my knee pad, I think I would fit in well with a lady named Tracy Wayne Gacy.
Oh wow. Okay. Yes. I noticed that you did have two orange knee pads and some black and white wrestling boots. Where do you get your wrestling gear?
Well, nowadays I've turned to making my own as I change my look. But I always got them from obscure places, like the blue singlet that I used to wear with the white on it, which, I mean, in my mind was kind of, I mean, it was just whatever. You know, that was a Madman one. My boots, pairs of boots made by a couple different places. Those black and white ones, which were actually stolen out of my car in Tampa probably a month ago, maybe 2 months ago. those boots, I believe, were High Spots.
Oh, wow. Okay. Jeez.
Yeah.
Huh. Well, Earl, in your
let me ask you this. That's an interesting question. I got a question for you. I'm saying
okay.
It piques my curiosity. Where does that like come from? Where are you curious? Where I get my gear from?
I myself have been in the ring, sort of. Yes, in
okay.
Indiana, and I was in a quattro thumbtack match, but I was known as
okay.
a budget deathfight. Yes.
Wow.
Because the national budget is on everyone's mind. Yes.
Absolutely, yeah.
But I didn't have as fancy wrestling boots as you did. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I think it's funny. I hear a lot of, like, you know what makes me laugh is, like, I hear a lot of, like, jabroni dudes, like, you know, actually, I was in the ring with Matt Stryker, and I remember he said in a promo, he said to me that he got his boots from Stagecoach, not High Spots. And I didn't really understand the reference. Like, I was like, I didn't know it wasn't cool to buy gear from a place that makes wrestling gear, like High Spots. You know what I mean? Like, you know, they only make wrestling gear. They only have a giant warehouse where they make all the stuff for WWE. I don't really understand. I don't think it matters. I mean, I see dudes that have boots made in Mexico by guys in little cobbler shops. I don't think it really matters as long as the functionality is good. I'd rather have custom everything than just generic fall off stuff. But I think maybe that's the thought with High Spots, is they have a lot of generic fall off stuff. But at the same time, it's like saying Nikes are, you know, nobody's Jordans are custom made. They're just Jordans. You know what I mean? So, you know, I think they're not even cheap, really, like those boots. So I don't really get it. Like, I didn't get it when he said it either. But, you know, I just think gear's gear, man. If it works, it works. You know, I actually miss those black boots. I wish they didn't get stolen out of my car. It was a shame. Somebody out there has about 100 8x10s of mine. I can't imagine those, but they opened up that suitcase and they're like, oh, look, here's 100 8x10s of Earl Cooter, a knee pad with Charles Manson on it, a pair of trunks that say Down and Dirty and have a Guns N' Roses logo on the front, and, you know, a towel. Here's a towel. So,
wow.
I hope it was worth it to the dudes that stole my gear out of my car, but that's okay. It wasn't at a wrestling show either. It was like, wasn't the typical. I'm not blaming anything wrestling. This was at a gas station. I just have a cool car. Somebody saw it and they probably thought there was something exciting in that bag.
Wow, that sucks. But and that knee pad with Charles Manson on it. You know, Charles Manson now has been in prison for over 45 years.
Yeah. And, yes. You know, I'm not saying he shouldn't be, but my particular interest with Charles Manson is, you know, it's the old, if your friends told you to jump off the Brooklyn Bridge, would you? And, you know, the question everybody ever asks is, you know, if somebody said, you know, your mom says that to you growing up, friends told you to jump off the Brooklyn Bridge, would you do it? Well, the answer is, if you did do it, should your friend go to jail?
Ooh,
and,
man.
You know, that's...
Yeah.
That's where my head's at with the Charles Manson thing. And, you know, I think it's interesting. And I'm not saying, look, obviously he was part of a horrible thing. Nobody's debating that. I just think it's interesting that he's noted as one of the most notorious serial killers, but he actually didn't kill those people. He didn't do it.
I don't, you know, that's kind of interesting with today's DNA ability with DNA to test evidence. I wonder if they could ever go back and prove something.
It's without a question that he wasn't there. Nobody ever says he was. All the people that did it said he wasn't there.
Oh, okay.
They said he just masterminded it. So I'm just saying, like, you know, I'm not saying it wasn't wrong. It was totally wrong. But I'm just saying he actually gets the distinction of killing somebody, and he hasn't. I don't think he killed anybody.
Mm. Okay, yeah, I think he was outside the gates while his followers did that, including Tex Watson. Yes.
Right, right. Yeah. But I'm just saying, you know, you look at John Wayne Gacy, you look at Jeffrey Dahmer, you look at all these guys, they were getting their hands dirty. I'm just saying, Charles Manson's the most notorious one of them all, didn't even get his hands dirty. It's just a unique concept there.
That's true, yes. Yeah.
But to be honest, I mean, besides my little bit of curiosity with the whole thing, it's really just I enjoy the joke of having the Charles in Charge logo with his face on it. So it's a reference to you know, Charles in Charge, the TV show featuring teenage heartthrob Scott Baio.
Yes.
You know, so it's I mixed the two now. So it says Charles in Charge, but it's actually Charles Manson. So basically, Charles Manson is in charge of my knee during a wrestling match, so steer clear of it.
Wow. Now, do you have that one album that Scott Baio put out? That's a good question.
I did not know Scott Baio put out an album. And
yes.
I may be inclined. I will probably download it later on. I will definitely have to check that out.
Oh, all right.
I'm a huge Scott Baio fan.
Oh, wow. Okay. I didn't know that. Wow. Very nice. Okay. Well, Earl, earlier in the show that you mentioned that you wrestled Shockwave the Robot, can you confirm that he entered the ring with the entrance music Mr. Roboto by Styx?
Nope, did not. He had a weird robot song. I don't know what it was. It was more like breakdance music. I agree with you. You should come out to Mr. Roboto, but that's probably why you don't hear much about Shockwave anymore. Maybe if you chose the obvious entrance music, it would serve a better purpose for him. But then again, I don't know if he cares. So.
Wow, all right. Well, if you could go back in time to, say, 1980, would one of your top bands that you would like to see, would it be Devo?
No, I would go, they're talking about the 80s or actual 1980?
1980, yes.
Well, I'm going to go ahead and guess Oingo Boingo was still probably a band at that point. Like, they were still probably starting out, even though they hadn't quite hit big yet. I'd probably rather see Oingo Boingo.
Personal
favorites. Pretty sure Duran Duran was cooking pretty hard at that point. I would be into that. Devo would be low on the list. Devo doesn't have much to offer other than Whip It, which really isn't, I mean, doesn't really, I don't
well,
know.
Well, they had Jocko Homo and Jerking Back and Forth.
Okay, you say so.
I just say that because I received a Devo album from a wrestler, not really a wrestler, but a band leader for the Razor Ramones, and he gave me a Devo album, and I've got it autographed by many wrestlers in the Northwest. Yes.
Well, I hope to add to that someday for you, bro.
Oh, that'd be very nice. Okay. All right. Well, Earl, just one last thing before I turn it back over to Sign Guy. We assign YouTube or homework assignments. I have a homework assignment folder, and I'd like to assign you a homework assignment, if you wouldn't mind.
Sure, go ahead, man.
Okay, it's to look up the YouTube video entitled Shockwave the Robot, Breakdance, Body Slam, and Beyond.
Okay, I'm on it. I'm a fan of all things Shockwave, dude.
Oh, great, okay. And, of course, as a side project, you could look up Goldust Meets Booker T at a 7-Eleven. That's one of my favorites.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. I think it's amazing that you guys are so into Shockwave, because I think I brought his name up first, and you guys just, like, know all about Shockwave the Robot. And it's impressive because, to be honest, I wouldn't know much about him if I didn't wrestle him, but I happen to wrestle him, so, you know, I became a Shockwave fan.
Wow, okay. All right, well, I'm going to turn it back over to Sign Guy, and it was good talking with you. Yes.
All right, man. I appreciate it.
Well, Earl, one of the questions I have for you, you look to be in pretty decent shape right now. I'm sure it's a lot of hard work. What's the current diet and training regimen that you employ to maintain?
You know, I got to tell you, it's actually depressing to me because of how much I actually work out. I feel like I should look a lot better. Not that I look bad, but I just, you know, everybody wants to look better, and I feel like I should have probably the most ripped abs in the world, and I don't. And I'm saying, so looking at this, 6 days a week minimum, I do minimum half-hour cardio every day, and then I do one body part a day. So it would be like, I could just run down my whole routine, would be like Monday's back, Tuesday's shoulders, Wednesday's legs, Thursday's chest, Friday's arms, and then in those basic groups, I will add in another muscle. So it's like, you know, Monday's back and biceps, Tuesday's chest and shoulders. And, like, I keep going, and I work out very hard, and I spend, like, probably minimum 2 hours in the gym every day, 6 days a week. And then even on Sundays, I find myself doing, like, high-intensity cardio. And, I mean, I eat the worst, most boring diet. You know, basically every meal past breakfast is, like, grilled chicken, vegetables, and maybe a sweet potato. I only drink water, occasionally a little juice. That's it. So it really sucks. And, I mean, you get some results, but, you know, it's tough, man. It's tough.
we have a game on this show that we like to play. We call it Bring On to Toys, Bring On to Funk. I'll ask a series of two options, the one that you prefer. That is the answer. Are you prepared to play around and Bring On to Toys, Bring On to Funk?
I'm prepared.
All right. First
did you
one.
Just cue up a sound effect? Wait. Is that a sound effect that almost happened? I thought I heard a sound.
I was laughing.
Oh, okay.
All right. First one, pinfall or submission?
So I have to pick one of these two?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm going to go with pinfall. That's pretty easy.
Cage match or barbed wire match?
Cage match all the way.
Glow or shimmer?
Oh, I'm supposed to answer one, but I'm going to say the other, glow.
Jazz or bluegrass?
I'm going to go with jazz.
Zoo or museum?
I'm going to go with museum. These are hard.
Book or magazine?
I'm going to go with magazine.
Steve Lombardi or Steve Blackman?
Steve Lombardi all the way, dude.
Ring robe or ring jacket?
I'm going to go with jacket.
Choke slam or power slam?
Power slam.
The final one, real ropes or cables?
Real ropes.
We have just a few minutes left of time today, so I want to give back to you. If there's anything that you'd like to say to the listeners, plug and promote anything and everything, shows, merchandise, social medias, whatever it is you'd like, floor is all yours.
Sure. You can check out me on Facebook. I believe that you just look up Earl Cooter. I don't know what the actual URL is. I don't know if anybody uses those for Facebook anymore. So just type in Earl Cooter. You can't miss me. I believe I'm the only one with that name on there. My Twitter is EarlCooter1. I had to put a 1 in front of it because, believe it or not, somebody had the name Earl Cooter. But when you go to the profile, it's dead. So I think somebody just wanted to sell it to me, but I wasn't buying. I just put a 1 in front of it, and that settled that. So check me out on there. Check out. We got some cool things going on over in FTW at FTWWrestling.com. And I don't know, that's about it, man. Support your local indie fed, support local wrestling, support wrestlers. They need it. They're here for you. They perform for you. They kill themselves for you. They live on the road for you. It's all for you. It's support. That's about it, man. I ain't got much else to say on that. I'd just like to thank everybody who took the time to listen. Hope you're entertained. And I don't know. I guess see you next time, man.
All right. Well, fans, if you have the opportunity to get to a show when Earl Cooter's on it, definitely check it out. Great, great talent. Doing some very good work out there. Support your local independents. We'll be back with you next week. Next Friday, we have Nurse Sanity out of Oklahoma. Should be great.
What we got?
Nurse Sanity out of Oklahoma is our guest next week.
I do not know her. What about who was the week before?
See, last week we had a manager from Portland named Sarge.
Okay, who was the last wrestler you had on the show?
See, last wrestler would have been Gregor Petrov.
Okay, all right, yeah, I've heard that name before. I don't personally know. Just curious. Just want to see if there's any buddies of mine.
I'm sure over the years we've had some people you've probably come across.
Oh no, I'm sure. I just met recently. I just wondered if there's anybody recently I could get excited about.
All right, well, fans, get out there, support your local independents. We'll talk to you next time.